Hey guys, welcome to episode 169 of the JV Club. It's my final Boy of Summer. Boy, that was a Mark Evan Jackson worthy pause for those of you who are thrilling adventure fans. My final Boy of Summer, the amazing Dana Gould. I can't think of a better way to end the Boys of Summer series. Now, for those of you who had specific people that you were hoping I would record, and by the way, I had some people I was hoping to record, it's just catch as catch can sometimes in the summer. There were some ones that were scheduled that fell through for my schedule or their schedule. I will get to them. Cora fans, please know that PJ and Dave Faustino are very high on my list, and we tried and failed, but I adore them and we will make it happen. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had a blast. I'm excited to get back to my lady guests. What else do I want to say? I want to say, please feel free to take a few seconds out of your day to leave positive feedback on iTunes. I know that's something I talk about maybe every 20 episodes, but it really does help. So if you have a chance, please get on there and do so. I'm sure there's other podcasts that you can talk about happily with iTunes when you're on there. Go give us some love. You know what I'm saying? And then I want to just make a quick announcement. I don't know how many of you know or didn't know this, but I was scheduled to do my podcast at the LA Podfest. And, unfortunately I had to pull out of it because I am shooting something that entire weekend and I could only get, very little nighttime stuff off, and it just felt like it was too much to take on. But I'm really excited because I love LA Podfest that I'm going to be doing a couple of other people's podcasts as a guest. So that's kind of what felt manageable. And that's what the plan is. So I'm really looking forward to that. I want to thank, for your emails, Ray. Love that you, gave a shout out to the James Rodet episode. Swara, thank you so much for, bringing up the concept of bullying and how crucially important it is that we continue to combat that. Louisa, I want to say, keep kicking ass with your studies. Anthony, you are an awesome teacher that I am so excited got in touch. Matt, thank you for your guest suggestion. And then on Facebook, I want to say congrats to Kit. I want to welcome Aurora and Kimberly and Karen and Jessica to the podcast. They just discovered it recently. I think they're enjoying it, and that makes me very, very happy. Allison, thank you for posting that ridiculous video. And I want to also thank Lori for your post. And Louisa said, it's been a while since I gave a shout out to all the janitors. Janitors, I'm so bad at calling you janitors. And it's funny because I was thinking about the podcast sort of recap of Thrilling Adventure Hour ending that I did with Mark Evan Jackson and Ben Blacker the other day, and how he was saying that calling everyone the work juice players just felt like such a joke. And I could not have related to that more, because I thought, God, that's how I felt about the idea of listeners being called janitors. Not because I don't think it's awesome, but because there's something about it that feels like it's so presumptuous of me. But all that notwithstanding, janitors, I love you. I want to thank on Twitter, believe it or not, I made some notes on Twitter. I want to thank Andrea, I'm not sure, Millie. I want to thank Margaret. Thank you again for recommending the podcast to so many people. And I want to thank Peter for your tweet regarding Hal Lublin's episode. I think that's going to do it, guys, but I hope you enjoy this episode. I'm very excited to be attending a convention in Sacramento and one in Hawaii in the coming weeks. And You're the Worst season 2 is going to premiere I think next week, so check that out on FXX. And guys, I'll talk to you soon, and you're awesome.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Now I'm fully recording, and also I'm not going to edit that out. I want everyone to wonder what you were just talking about that was so emphatically no.
I was offering to donate organs to someone, and they were just not into it.
What about donating the state of Oregon? Do you have the power to do that?
I would like to donate the state of Oregon to Hawaii.
Oh, that's so generous.
Yeah.
Now, how does that benefit them?
Well, I think there are two. Did you read the Confused States of America?
That sounds like a smart person's book.
No, it's not. It's a children's book.
Oh!
Where all the states, states switch.
Oh, no, that's really cute.
Yeah, and so Hawaii goes up to Oregon and freezes, and Oregon goes to Hawaii and gets sunburned.
Oh, listen to that. Mm-hmm. That's a real thing. That's a book someone made.
Yeah.
I don't know. That immediately sounds to me like it would not serve the purpose of teaching.
No.
I would walk away going like, I'm pretty sure Oregon is an island.
It's written by the people who wrote The Stinky Cheese Man, which if you're familiar with that, is an excellent children's book.
Yes, I have heard of that, but I guess I haven't read it. It turns out that as many children's books as I read without children, I still ultimately don't have children, so I'm not exposed to as many as...
You keep reading it, hoping that they'll show up.
Isn't that how babies are born?
Pretty much.
My understanding was if you read 10,000 books, it's like becoming an expert on something. If you read 10,000 children's books...
Yes.
You have a baby.
You can have an osmotic toddler.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Look, having a baby is very important, and it's very simple. It's a lot of money, and then you go to China, and they call you, and you get onto the third floor conference room, and you have a baby.
It's the same story. Time-worn.
Time memoriam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You did that 3 times?
I did. Yeah.
Was there ever a time when it wasn't going to be a beautiful Chinese daughter?
Well, there's an interesting story. But this is neither the time nor the place.
Objection, Your Honor. I should have told the listener we're in a court of law. I think I should have disclosed that right off, and I didn't. That's my bad.
We did our second child. We did our first child, Lulu. And I, at the time, was writing in The Simpsons, and I wrote a Simpsons episode about the family going to China to adopt a baby for Selma.
I remember.
That baby, based on my oldest daughter. And in fact, the design is the design of her baby photo, which is really interesting. Yeah, it was great. We said a couple of things that were a little snarky, but nothing nasty.
I feel that that's what you were hired to do.
Yeah, about China. Mm-hmm. But the episode was to air, I believe, 4 weeks before we were to leave again to get Alice, our second daughter, and I and my wife at the time were like, because we thought then they like, because when we went to get Liu, we were in Chengdu, China, which is up in the north of China where the panda bears are from. Mm-hmm. And we were in just some office in some building, and the guy gets up and excuses himself, and we look at his computer screen, and it was our tax returns.
Oh my.
Yeah, like they had like, okay, then. Oh,
they really can hack anything and get
anything they want. And so I was afraid that they were going to see this episode, get a little miffed, and then just like hand us a lobster. No, that's your baby. Everything good? That's who you're getting.
Two things I want to clarify. Number one.
So, just to finish. When it aired the first time, I had a pseudonym. It was written by Lawrence Talbot.
Oh, interesting. That is a weird tidbit.
Which is the Wolfman's real name. Famous alter ego.
Okay.
So that's how Lawrence Talbot.
And then the second
time? No. Then I was back and put my name back on it.
Number one, I want to clarify that your second daughter, Alice, is not a panda bear.
I can either confirm nor deny that.
The court has noted
Lulu is from Chengdu, where the panda bears are from. Alice is from Hubei. Which, try to imagine, Times Square in the 70s with chickens.
Okay.
You have Hubei.
All right.
I'm sorry.
That actually incorporates a lot of my fantasies anyway.
In late August.
All right. That I do have to tweak a little bit because my fantasies, it's always November. The second thing is, what is The Simpsons? I'm sorry. I can't. I need to get better at
the Buffalo Bills had a very famous running back.
That's my favorite thing to do about things that everyone knows what they are. And The Simpsons is one that I've had the opportunity to do on more than one occasion. I did it with Yardley in New Zealand. She was talking about something and someone said something and then it was just quiet for a second. I was like, so what now? What is The Simpsons? And I managed not to laugh during that one. And she for sure did think maybe I didn't know.
We used to do a thing about an FM disc jockey that didn't know anything about music that was brought over from the newsroom. Mm-hmm. And any song he played on an oldie station, it was like, that was Proud Mary.
the Beatles. Everything was the Beatles.
I would have liked, I think, listening to that radio guy instead of all of the radio people that we none of us can stomach.
Nah, indeed.
Rob was just telling me about our mutual friend Rob Cohen. Shout out to Rob Cohen. See his movie about being Canadian.
How is it that you were talking to a super party Rob Cohen?
I had breakfast with Rob on Saturday morning.
How did that happen?
Because we just always try to maybe get together and then never do. And so it takes a year to just have a breakfast and catch up.
Interesting.
Of course, we talked about you.
I had dinner with him last night.
I can't remember the point.
Tis a tiny world.
I get that you're more recent than I am. Yeah.
You mentioned that?
No.
Yeah, it figures.
But yeah, we were talking about a character that Greg Barrett used to do that was a DJ. Yeah, I guess,
yeah,
right?
The goat. Yeah, they go.
I've never heard him do that. I need to hear him do that.
That's really hilarious.
Yeah, I think that was before my time, which seems crazy because I feel like I watched him. There are a handful of comedians that I actually knew I liked before when I still thought I hated stand up. Did you like stand up when you're was there stand up in the way that it existed? And listen, I know that sounds like I'm dating you, but I didn't like stand up at all when I was in high school. Like, I had no real sense of what it was.
I like the idea that you're dating me would be so abhorrent.
I don't mean to date you.
I mean, I would rather just...
I don't mean to assign you an age that is inappropriate.
But you lobbed it over the net, and I had to hit it back.
I really did.
For those of you wondering, I am the age of your average friendly tree.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of years old. As I said, according to Comedy Central, when I was 17 or near retirement, long story longer, I was really obsessed with stand-up. It was all I thought about and cared about when I was in high school and when I started doing it. Really when I started doing it. Then it quickly becomes your job, and even though it's a passion, and it is a passion of mine, my tank is on F. Like, I don't seek it out if I'm not at the show. Right. There are people that I love to watch, and I love meeting new comedians that blow me away. Like, and there's always new people out there that just, Mike Lawrence, I just saw, you know, in the past year, and just blew me away. And so many great people. But I don't seek it out. I don't go to shows if I'm not in them. I don't watch it on television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
Did you, when you say you were completely and totally obsessed by it, I know that you have other things that you've carried with you that you adore from when you were younger.
Because
you do have an impressive collection of certain memorabilia.
Yeah. Well, that
actual,
was just
you were an actual nerd.
Not one of these. I was a nerd that got beat up.
Yeah, like a real nerd.
I was a real nerd.
Before it was cool.
I was fat, unattractive, and I got punched a lot.
That's where the real comedy comes
from.
Many would argue.
I was a real nerd.
Where were you?
Nowadays, nerds look, here will date me. Nowadays, nerds look like Michael Cole from the Mod Squad.
Yep, you did your job on all counts there. That checked off a lot of boxes on the list for many people.
Real nerds don't wear aviator shades.
Yeah, I know. It got a little tricky and confusing. Where was this? Where were you getting beat up? Where were you found getting beat up? We're in Massachusetts.
In the middle of it, you know, if you ever saw The River's Edge
with
the movie
Keanu Reeves,
yeah, I was like,
did
I
you
grew
live
up
on the edge
there.
Of the river?
Yeah, I lived there, but in Massachusetts.
Okay,
real small mill town.
I've been to Pittsfield.
Oh yeah, that's a little out west, but that's not dissimilar to where I grew up. I grew up by Worcester, which is like, I was describing my high school. I graduated high school in the early 80s at the height of post-punk new wave music, when
which
music
is awesome.
Was so great.
Yeah.
And the album charts when I was in high school were The Clash, Elvis Costello, Blondie, David Bowie, like all this amazing music. The biggest band in my high school, Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
You know, it was just...
Yeah. Were there a handful
a
of people
flautist.
You? Lest we not mention... Yeah.
Ian Anderson was a flautist.
That's certainly true.
Yeah.
Were there a handful of people who were into that stuff as well? Or did
nobody.
You really were just the only one?
I didn't get into it until I went to college.
Now, this has nothing to do with you or your high school, but I do like talking about small Massachusetts towns.
Yes.
being from Tucson, Arizona,
right,
I went to visit my friend Meredith Morgan, who moved from Tucson to Pittsfield when I think we were in fourth grade. And for some crazy reason, my parents, probably because they were excited to get rid of histrionic me and were divorced and wanted time to themselves,
right,
agreed to let me fly by myself to Pittsfield.
Now, how old were you when you did that?
I mean, I was 11, maybe?
Oh, Christ.
No, I was definitely really young.
Yeah.
And I for sure threw
you wore a card.
Up. I definitely wore a card. I was definitely escorted by pretty stewardesses because that's what they were then. They weren't flight attendants.
Yep.
They were just like very sweet.
And you got like steak and lobster on a plane back then.
I mean, I don't remember that. Yeah. I mean, I for sure smoked. But no, but I remember also like being really, really nervous and not being motion sick, but just the process of changing flights. Or I think I got to
stay on
the plane. I puked. Like in Chicago, just after we had already landed and the whole plane was empty, I went in and puked. So I don't know how I held it and then suddenly was sick at that moment. But Pittsfield to me was the kind of like quintessential, very much like Stephen King's Maine type town.
No, that's,
you feel
that's
like every house is haunted.
Yes. No, that's where I grew up. No, that's, that is where I grew up. I mean, especially, I don't know why, but like, I think the most... In the way that people I knew who went to high school out here in Los Angeles, if you read Fast Times at Ridgemont High, it's like, yeah, that's kind of where I went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Christine is where I went to high school.
Yeah, there you go.
That's absolutely where I went to high school.
Well, I'm asking that because I did have that sense when I was there, and I loved being afraid of things, and I wanted desperately to have psychic powers, and I wanted to believe in ghosts. These guys know. All of that stuff I wanted... proof of as much as possible.
I like
or at
you,
least to suggest that there might be proof.
You wanted to believe in ghosts.
I did.
But you didn't.
I doubted.
Yeah.
It's
now, do you know about April? Do you know about April Richardson's fear?
Her fear of ghosts? Yeah. We talked about it on the podcast.
Of Civil War ghosts.
Yeah.
It's a very specific fear.
It's so significant.
April Richardson, by the way, was the name of the... When I said Mike Lawrence, I was trying to think of... And there's somebody else that I just met in the past 2 years. It's a comedian that killed me.
Yeah.
It's Apey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just...
She has the things that she's afraid of are mostly things that I and many other people want to be like. I want to be afraid of that in a delicious, thrilling
way.
Yeah,
I want to be afraid of abandoned construction machinery.
No, I know. I get it. I get all of it.
Yeah.
I just am not, I don't have the fear, but if I had the fear, it would translate into a thrill that I would chase after. I would
John Hodgman is terrified of underwater robotics. Like the concept of the Disney Jungle Cruise fills him with terror.
Yeah, that's
that
great.
There are robotics working
underwater.
God,
I'm so boring. I need to come up with some different and interesting fears.
Yeah, like I love, and you're talking about the things that I brought like with me. Like I love horror movies and science fiction movies.
Yeah.
And I never lost... that. I mean, that was always my emotional vacation.
Yeah.
Place.
What was the last thing that you saw, speaking of things that you're still inspired by? Like, can you think of a contemporary horror thing that you were like, that was fucking great?
Oh, I thought It Follows was great.
You did?
I thought it was very, good.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really blows me away that, and this is one of the great things about life, that my daughter got me into, Doctor Who, which I was always aware of and appreciated, but didn't get into it. And then I started watching it with her.
God, that feels like it would be the only thing I would have expected on top of if you sort of lay out the rest of the stuff I knew you liked. Although the stuff you liked was more classic Americana
I was older because also I was the youngest. Well, I have a younger sister, but I had four older brothers and my mom was all into it. So I got a lot of the trickle down.
Is that what trickle down economics is?
Yeah.
Is it
no, actually, because
only about horror
because,
culture?
Well, trickle down economics is different from this and that. I actually did get something.
Oh! So it worked.
But I like in trickle down economics, they can't even give it a good lie of a trickle.
I know.
That's what it is. You give us everything and you'll get a trickle. They can't even lie about,
And also just like you'll get a trickle eventually.
Yeah.
In decades.
Yeah.
Because that's
like,
how slow a trickle
it's like
moves.
If a marriage was called biannual hand job, marry me once every other year, I'll give you a reluctant sandpaper handy.
And what they can expect in return is a trickle.
Yeah, exactly.
At best.
Yeah.
At very best.
It's so ridiculous. But I got all that stuff. But Doctor Who, I mean, it's written by Stephen Moffat, who writes Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a genius.
Yeah,
and I don't know how he does it all.
He really is. Did you ever see Jekyll? It's just like
it's amazing. Jekyll is amazing.
Love James Nesbitt.
Has one of
so
my
much.
Favorite
huge crush of mine.
One of my favorite lines of anything. I was born to hurt you.
Yes. So gleeful.
Yeah. So great.
Were you okay? So this was stuff that you. Is most of the kind of horror side and the sci-fi stuff, is that stuff that trickled down?
Yeah, and I still love it. And Star Trek and, of course, Planet of the Apes. Which
were you that kid then that looked up to your brothers rather than being like, I'm going to be a different...
No. I was totally... My older brothers... I have called myself the Marilyn Munster of my family. Four older brothers, all athletes, all a foot taller than I am. Mm-hmm. All... tough drink, big drinkers, big druggers, big hunters, fishermen, athletes. I was a fat little kid that liked Star Trek. And then I had a sister.
Mm-hmm.
My nickname was the mailman's kid. I do look like my father in the face. So they knew that I was genetically a member of the family.
Right.
But that was the only thing that would tie me to the family. And now that I am a parent and I look back at my kids, like, yeah, I wouldn't have known what to make of me from my parents' point of view because I was drastically different and also one of those kids that, and not to get too heavy, but like desperately wanted to be loved but would not let you love him.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
They take deep roots. Yeah. But it's because
you don't trust anybody. And
well,
because,
sure. I mean, I guess that's my...
Because you're not raised in a nurturing environment because your parents drink.
So it is alcohol. I always thought there was nothing wrong with parents who drank. So how much attention was called within your family? I know externally people joked about it and stuff, but within your family, how much attention was called to how different you were from everybody? Was that something that you kind of had to carry around with you in your house? Do you know what I mean?
When you're the fifth of six, if you're not on fire, you're ignored.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot. It was a lot of that, and occasionally,
did your younger sister get different attention? She was the first girl,
and she was the like the family mascot. I mean, it really was. It was an exacerbated middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel bad for my middle child.
You forget. Oh, yeah. And none of your other brothers who are also
vigorous middle child.
She is.
Yeah.
I always wonder, I get confused with that. So I was just talking about that with someone where I feel like it's almost to me like astrology sometimes. I'm an only child. But I was using that as an example. I was saying like, and look, I know I do this because, you know, I probably need attention because I'm an only child. And then I was like, now hold on, because I could have inserted any other child in the after I needed attention. Like, you need attention because you're the eldest and you had too much responsibility. You need attention because you're the middle child. You're the middle child. You need attention because you're the baby because you had attention. So that's what you got used to. It started to feel like, well, maybe I'm ascribing a behavior I think must be for this reason, but really I would have just been like this no matter whether I'd been the middle child, eldest, or the only child or whatever.
Yeah. I find that older children in both of my families, my family of origin and my family now, are super confident. My oldest brother... my oldest brother and my oldest daughter are both just super confident.
Mm-hmm.
And they have nothing else in common. But
if it's a recognizable quality, yeah.
And the baby does get hella spoiled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The comedy side of it for you, you already were interested in that. And did you feel like that? Did you see it? I'm always interested in what young people, there's a question here somewhere, I promise. But I'm interested in how much looking back and kind of hindsight we have when we look at choices that we make versus having an awareness in the moment. Because you're so fucking smart, Dana. I hate to be the one to break it to you, but you're brilliant.
Smart.
With a brain that won't ever turn off.
Smart.
You're very, very smart.
Oh, well, you're sweet to say that.
Did you have a sense then, did you understand what was a Band-Aid? Did you understand what you were doing? Were you interested in, I'm this kid, I see myself, I have this ability to have this perspective on how I fit into all of this, and one way I don't is the very person I am,
and
I need to make fun of that? Or
I knew, that's a great question. I knew I didn't belong where I was. And there were two people that I knew as... a handful of people that sort of like gave me a glimpse, like, no, you can do this. My best friend growing up, who I still am friends with, and I've known him since I was four,
mm-hmm.
Lived across the street from me. He's a couple years older than I am, but like, he got me into Monty Python when I was seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 8 years old.
I love the stuff
old.
Where you don't even know why it's funny until you know why.
Yeah, but like I knew it was funny. Mm-hmm. And Monty Python and the Holy Grail was shown uncut on the Boston public television station.
Wow.
And like 1970, well, it came out, I think, in 75.
In their mind, it was like, this is high-end British farce.
Yeah, so it must have been like 76. I must have been older. It was 76 because they showed it uncut. And I remember him describing The Black Knight to me and me not believing that that could be something that was on television.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in a movie.
Yeah.
And then they showed it and I was just like, that was it. And he got me into like Woody Allen and Groucho Marx, like fun, smart, funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those people in my house of origin would have any place. So it was great. It's like, no, there's another way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a cousin, that was pretty, pretty cool. And so I grew up knowing that I didn't belong, but I didn't know. And I knew I wanted to be in show business from a very early age. My theory was I wanted to be an actor in horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought if I became a comedian,
I love wherever this is going.
If I became if I became a comedian and became really successful, I would become so successful that they would let me write my own movies to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would write horror movies and be in them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, it's the most circuitous route. It's sort of like going, I wanted to be a sous chef.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought by getting elected to the United States Senate, they would have to let me be a sous chef anywhere in the country.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That really is so specific.
But it was when you're only...
I mean, just the fact that you thought it would be possible to go from one to the... Like, most people, I mean, for me, I think I thought, oh, I'd love to be doing that, but I'm just a kid from Tucson, Arizona. Who's going to... You know what I mean? I didn't have a goal set that would have allowed for me to even believe I could have been a comedian.
Yeah, but no version of reality allowed me to stay where I was. So I had to go. I was just like, you got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And when your only tool is a hammer, every problem is a nail. And the only tool I had was that I was funny. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted to be, I knew I could do stand-up comedy.
And you knew that because you joked around in class and stuff.
I was always very funny.
Were you well-liked in the sense that you were, I mean, I know that you
was
beat up
I was popular,
too, but
possibly not well-liked.
Dana's great. You want him in a classroom, but you don't want him at your party.
There were teachers, it's funny, I went to a very small high school, and there were teachers who adored me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had dinner with my high school English teacher out here like a year ago.
That's great.
Because her daughter lives out here.
I sense a butt coming on. You had teachers who adored you.
And then the other teachers who despised me because I was irreverent. And
For
the same reason.
Did you feel like... were they subjects that you had less respect for? Like, do you feel that anything about your behavior was slightly more
I was irreverent and contemptuous of authority and funny about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that had a sense of humor thought it was great and we got on great. Mm-hmm. And I then respected them.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that didn't, I had contempt for, and that was mutual. It was very mutual.
So how
and I
were
didn't
you
find
as a
out
student?
Until later. Oh. That one of the reasons that I probably didn't get booted out of school was that the principal was my father's second cousin, which they hid from us. So we never knew that Mr. Sales and my dad were cousins.
That's funny.
So we had an in.
How Thornbirds? I don't know.
Yeah,
just the idea that it was that. That
it was
twisted.
Very small. Very small town and very. Everybody knew everybody.
Did your grades reflect your teacher's opinions of you, or did you get good or bad grades across the board?
No, I was really good in there were certain like English and things like that. I didn't even have to apply myself. Mm-hmm. Science, I was horrible. Math, I was atrocious at, but I knew I had to do well in it. So that was where I ended up becoming really good friends with this guy, Mr. Hannum, who oddly looked like Mr. Hands from Fast Times. He looked a lot like Ray Walston.
Uh-huh.
And he was my trigonometry teacher in ninth grade. And I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. And
I never got as far as trig.
Yeah, I couldn't do trigonometry. I went after school for help every day.
Jesus, Dana.
To get a good grade. And he ended up respecting me for that. Yeah. And we became pretty friendly. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back to my high school, you know, 10 or, yeah, probably 10 years after I graduated. I was well-established comedian. I was on television already. And he goes, Gouldy, so what do you do for money? And by this time, I've been on television.
Yeah.
And I go, I do, you know, as I perform, Mr. Hannum, I'm a comedian. He goes, I know, you get off stage, you pass the hat, you buy a round. but what do you do for money? And I go, oh, no, I make so much more than you. You got to get out of Massachusetts.
Yeah, both of my parents are teachers, and I have a lot of guilt about what I was raised on and how ridiculous. I don't know how they even did it at all.
Yeah, I don't either, yeah.
Against what, maybe not even me, but some of my friends make. It's just, I definitely carry that around with me in a way that I don't think is very useful to anyone. But.
And I'm going through it all over again. You know, my oldest daughter is in seventh grade, and like literally she found out Friday that she has to name the, name, pronounce, and spell every Central and South American country that speaks Spanish and its capital.
Oh, wow.
Which is a lot for Friday to Wednesday.
Sure.
And I literally, when I dropped her off at school today, as Mr. Involved Parent, I went up to her Spanish teacher and I said, just a question about, because we're studying together for this test.
Mm-hmm.
Do they need to identify where they are on the map?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, no. She goes, okay, she said that. And I go, why isn't Brazil on the map? She goes, because they don't speak Spanish in Brazil. And then I go, well, what do they speak? Brazilian? Which is our only smooth language. And she goes, Portuguese. And I'm like, go fuck myself. What?
That's great.
Did you know that they spoke Portuguese in Brazil?
Yes, but it's,
but
it's only because I have a weird fascination with Portuguese. I guess because of like Stan Getz or like the girl from Ipanema or something.
Sure.
I just didn't understand that there would be a place other than Portugal. And also it doesn't matter.
No.
But there's when I was in France, there were a lot of Portuguese people in France. And so for some reason I became more familiar with like the fact that Brazil is.
So are all those Sergio Mendes songs in Portuguese?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think so.
I just assumed it
all
was
the
Spanish.
Ones I can think of, yeah.
Mas Caneda is that's not Portuguese.
Maybe not, but maybe it's not Sergio Mendes, but yeah, I don't know. There's
group
a lot
is Brazil 66.
Yeah, I think it might be Portuguese.
And
it's not that they're not so different. It's just they're complicatedly different in ways that fuck up your brain. I
love
think.
That music so much.
So great, right?
Oh, I have gotten so into that music and Herb Albert and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That like it's my favorite time period. It's the mid 60s. Just before it got spooky and weird.
Uh-huh. Everybody was still like waving at each other in the recording and giggling a little bit. Maybe you'd catch a
Stoke
little of that
pants.
Off. Off mic.
It was just before everybody looked like Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Uh-huh.
And what I realized it was, and my home looks like your home. And what I realized I was doing was when I got divorced and got my own house,
mm-hmm.
I'm living in the house I wished I lived in as a child, but tied to that time period.
Mm. Isn't that funny how
it's a corrective.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how much of that is true for people who have a really strong affinity for very specific eras in terms of whether it's how that, because you don't dress the same way somebody who's super rockabilly. Mm-hmm. Dresses, everything about their presentation is like you. Oh no! You know exactly what my home looks like because I'm wearing it.
Yeah.
You don't do that, but you do have such an appreciation. And I think nostalgia is that feels like too easy of a catch-all phrase that I think gets kind of dismissed somehow. But But I do find it interesting because I obviously I like certain eras, but I don't feel like I've ever really gotten that excited about any one thing to the point where I just had a real passion for it or I collected. Yeah.
And you can't just and I know you can't overwhelm yourself with stuff. I mean, like your house and my house is just enough to not be kitschy.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. It can't necessarily just immediately be transported to that time and no one would know the difference.
Right.
You still have
exactly.
But
and I don't, and that, I just don't have the discipline like to dress like that.
You don't want to only shop at like the one place that services the Brown Derby.
Yeah. But I also have a style that if not of that era has some foundations in that are like, I don't walk around in sweatpants.
Sure.
I don't like.
Yeah, no, that's certainly
you know,
true.
Or workout pants. I would do not go on stage just wearing a t-shirt.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know,
no, you're right.
You know, it's like I have a like. There's a line of like, you got to look a little decent.
No, I appreciate that about you. I'm glad you don't walk around in sweatpants. I'm always glad when people don't walk around in sweatpants.
Well, that's a whole school I call sweatpants. Mm-hmm. You know, like. And they're nice people, like, you know, Adam Sandler's a nice guy and David Spade's a nice guy. But before they were on SNL, when I just knew them in LA, it was like I was like the sweatpants guys.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They just walk around in workout pants.
That makes sense. What did you draw? So when you were in high school, you had an appreciation for all of the bands that you were talking about that were popular, like, but not popular in your school, like the Clash
of
Blondie.
No, I did not. In high school. I had an awareness of them in high school, but I was still way into Star Wars and stuff in high school.
What did you dress like?
Very preppy.
Okay.
Very preppy. It was, you dress like a preppy or now they would be called stoners. We call them burnouts.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But if you, and also were, you know, early 80s when I graduated high school was the heyday of the preppy handbook.
Mm-hmm.
So you were either very preppy or a burnout.
Did you have any admiration for the burnouts world and that style? And stuff?
No, actually, because my brothers all were. So I was just like,
oh, they were.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. God, I guess I was imagining them to be like jocks. Well, they were.
Jocks, but their friends were. You know, some of them were jocks. One of them was a hardcore burnout.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my one brother, Jim. And I think it was in 10th grade, like the vice principal, he went into the vice principal's office to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And the vice principal said, like, yeah, high school's not for everybody.
Oh, not for everybody. The flexibility.
Yeah. Nah, maybe you're right. And he ended up.
We could use the desk.
Yep. He joined the Army and got his GED in the Army and then got into the Army and became a prison guard.
Yeah, that's.
But. Of all my brothers, the most open-minded, self-aware, self-effacing, gets it. Like,
God, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Have you done any? Have you gone to prisons and done sets and stuff?
No.
Anything like that?
No.
Some people
his
do.
Big
right?
Advice that's to me that... was his big. I don't need. I can get a gigs in that.
Why don't you want to give that?
Oh, I don't. I want to keep it all myself.
Right.
His advice to me was: don't go to prison.
Solid.
Yeah.
Solid. It is like he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And then what about, so no sports?
No.
And then how about girls? High school?
No.
Crushes?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't.
Were you even to the point where you had friendships with girls where they would be like,
oh,
I love Dana, but he's like my brother.
Oh, tons of them. Tons of them. Very close.
Kids like that who are into Star Wars, like they actually don't even really interact with girls because they don't know how
I was very, in my group, I was popular because I was funny. And I had very close friends. I've always had a lot of close friends that are women.
Mm-hmm.
I had very, very close friends that were girls in high school. And then I'm still like, when I go home, I at least email or talk to. But I didn't, none of that happened until college.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get crabs when I was 14. I got crabs
Thank
5 years
God for
before
that.
I got laid.
Oh my God. What? Did you tell me this already?
I hope so.
Like it's the first thing you tell a new friend.
Pillow talk. If we were dating, I'd have told you.
I'm sure I would have found that out right away.
My brother Mike came back from the Army on leave.
Oh my God.
Slept in my bed.
Oh my God.
And I got crabs. I got crabs from my brother.
Yeah, you did tell me this. I'm sure because it's got to be one of your your stories. You know,
it's
we
one
have
of my
our go-tos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or as my dad called them, saber-tooth crotch crickets.
And, that's much better.
Yeah, it is much better.
It really it paints a better picture.
Yeah,
than crabs. But it's crabs, terrible, you really think of crabs.
It's a terrible thing to have.
Why especially, are they called crabs?
Especially unarmed because
oh,
they look
God,
like
no
crabs.
No kidding. They do look like crabs.
Yeah, they do.
The tiny, if you look, yeah, they're gonna be microscopic.
No, they're
they
not
small?
Microscopic.
You can see tiny. Them.
Yeah, sure. I don't. I'm not the expert. let me just let
don't
me just,
trot out a story like that
them,
and then not give me a lot of
I
medical
had them
background.
In 1978.
About. Fair. I just have never. I guess
Jimmy
I thought
Carter
that they were...
was the president when I had crabs.
Was it his fault? Wait, I'm confused. Did they look? I'm not going to sit here and talk about crabs. I mean, maybe I will for the rest of the podcast. Yeah. But I guess I just thought of them as pubic lice, and I don't think of lice as being very big. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
You. Where how much do you want to get into this?
Really? Now I
if
feel
you
like
were, if you wear briefs
uh-huh.
and you're a man.
Yes.
Which I did uh-huh. in high school, you get itchy mm-hmm. and then you look and there's blood in them.
Oh,
like
God,
little
I didn't
bite
know
marks.
That. Oh,
there's
that's
little bite
awful.
Marks. And then
oh,
you
God.
Go to the pharmacy and talk to your Jimmy Romilio, mm-hmm. who is your dad's friend, mm-hmm. who's the pharmacist,
oh, no.
and you ask him for A2000, and he laughs.
Oh, God.
And you're 14, and you go home, and you use it, and then the next day, your underwear is full of crustacean corpses.
Oh, my God.
How many of you ladies are turned on too much?
Sorry. I apologize to everyone. I just needed to yeah. see that through. I needed that mystery solved.
But that was back
in, you knew
that
what,
was back
how did
in
you
the
figure
time
out what you had
when people
you
had hair on their bodies.
That's right.
We seem to have,
that's
we seem
true.
To have moved on.
We probably single-handedly.
We are now in the age of the Eloy.
Yeah. When is the leech just going to become popular?
Yeah, exactly.
They can cut, they're glad, though, everyone shaves and waxes because they
yeah.
can get right into it, the leeches.
I find I don't want to dwell on that topic. But I find that strange. And
oh, that
I,
there isn't that people yeah, don't
I, and
have
I, and
anymore.
People like, and I've said this on stage, but I'll, so you know it's funny. but like people like, do you manscape? No, I no.
Yeah,
not everything has to be cute.
Right, right, right.
It chicken parts.
Yeah,
there's a reason it's called junk.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a reason it's called a bush.
It looks like chicken. It looks like
yeah.
chicken parts.
Yeah.
And I don't want my chicken parts looking like they're fresh on the shelf at Trader Joe's.
Let there be some mystery. Some
I am happy
feathers.
With them looking like chicken parts that have been thrown on the floor of a busy barbershop. Okay. But with
oh,
women,
God.
I know
yeah.
with women, it's now a specialty item. Like women that have not had and you, women that have not had. Augmentation
mm-hmm.
and their body looks the way their body normally
mm-hmm.
that's like a specialty fetish.
Yes.
Like you have to look long and hard
right.
online
right.
to find that.
Right.
That's something that's current.
Right.
It's like it's a niche.
Yeah.
It's a niche appeal.
Yeah.
Niche Appeal, Dave Appeal's sister.
Niche Appeal. You said, did you get nicheappeal.com? Because that's a really,
niche,
probably
no,
a very
but
valuable
that would be
website.
A great idea, yeah.
I mean, I'll
you
talk
don't have
about
to,
it.
You don't
no,
have
I don't mind talking about it. I don't, it's not something I talk about very often. Uh-oh, you don't want me to talk about it. No, I just think, I don't know how I feel about it one way or the other because I think that there are, speaking in terms of sexuality, I think that there's like a sensation thing that happens that somebody might like the way it feels to have less hair mm-hmm. on their nerves.
Sure.
I don't know if that's where it started, if it was just a cosmetic thing to mm-hmm. begin with. I mean, I guess I'm speaking for both men and women when I say that, but also, I think that there's a part of, I think there's a part of like the same reason that women shave their armpits, which is it's not that there's some kind of issuance of like not necessarily that the culture is saying you don't need pubic hair anymore,
mm-hmm.
but that there's this sort of maybe we don't need as much body hair as we used to.
Right.
Like that's the undercurrent of like logical non oh, we just want every girl to look like a 7-year-old girl. You know what I'm saying? If you don't go down that road and you go and you make it about those two other things, those are the arguments I hear that make the most sense.
Yeah. And like, I will say, since we're going to have this conversation, I don't mind. I mean, I don't mind. I would prefer a woman shave her armpits, but it wouldn't, I wouldn't start throwing up.
Right.
The completely denuded to me is, it look like a little girl.
Yeah. No, and I think that that's true
to me. And I don't think that that's its intention.
Right.
But for me, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I get that.
The last I have three daughters, so I.
Well, I was going to ask you
the last
that
time
too.
I saw a vagina with no hair on it, also I had poop on it.
I was.
You can clean that up. And that was the Daytona Beach. I'm assuming you edit this.
No, I actually don't. Oh. So you're gonna have to just deal with all of that, unless you really want me to. And then
my podcast, I spend weeks.
I
editing.
Know you do.
I trim and
I used
talk
to,
about well pruned.
I used to, but now you. But you also have multiple guests, and you go. You sort of yeah.
I made
you,
it. This, you're I made
less
something
lazy than
I
am.
I made something easy difficult. That's what
you
I
sure
did.
You sure did.
I sure did.
Bless your heart.
Yeah.
I agree with you that no hair at all is that's weird to me. I did it when I was in my 20s because I wanted to. I was like, what's this all about?
Right.
And I did it once. And I looked at myself and was like, I don't like the way this looks. I feel like there's some disconnect between the way my body is shaped. Like I have a woman's body. I don't have a stick body and I don't have a little girl's body. So having a disconnect between, and I have breasts. So every part of it was
you
like, well, all
both.
Of this, you know what I mean? All of this says woman to me and this says child to me. And I don't even think it looks attractive because it looks like there's something wrong. It looks to me on my body like why, what's missing? There's
no,
something
clearly
missing.
You know, this is it's weird for me to talk about sexuality and not be joking about porn, which is at least an intimacy free zone
that
men can joke about.
That, sure.
But, vastly prefer a woman to look like an adult. And I find it sexy.
Yeah.
Especially when it goes down to the knees. And,
I'm thinking about all my Nickelodeon Korra fans who are like,
you don't have to look like Lenny Kravitz
mortified.
Is tying your shoes.
Uh-huh.
But, or in your case, Art Garfunkel. But... It's nice to look your age.
Yeah.
With me, I am a hairy person.
Mm-hmm.
And as my friend Jeff Cesario said about me, when you show up to the beach, people go, "Who called a cab?"
Oh, come on!
I'm pretty hairy, so like
body hair is great. I just don't have
me,
an issue with it at
were
all.
Were I to like be like completely, it would look like a gorilla had surgery. Uh-huh. You know, it would look like a dog that had surgery. Like, oh.
Yeah, it's all or nothing. No, yeah. I don't have a. I really don't have a problem with body
but
hair.
But I like.
He's unbuttoning a shirt.
Take it down a little bit because it's otherwise you look.
If it gets too fluffy,
it projects outwards
from your shirt.
Yeah, okay. I don't want that.
Well, then I guess you do manscape, kind of. But
yeah,
really
but
just
I don't
in the chest area.
I don't. Nothing is. No part of me looks like a chicken.
Okay, that's good to know. It's really good to know, and I think it says
this
a lot.
This is the least.
No, I don't think I've really talked about it in that way, but I do feel like it's something that people are aware of and think about. If I made anyone uncomfortable by describing myself as being bald when I was in my early 20s, there's nothing I can do about that.
But I don't know. I always think of the origin of things. Where did,
you're talking about God the Father and the Son Jesus Christ.
Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. I know the origin of how women's bodies changed from Marilyn Monroe, who by today's standards is a yak or a manatee, and the modern day version of a beautiful woman, which is a stick figure with giant boobs.
Right.
And that was fashion designers.
Right.
Wanted their clothes to hang perfectly. So runway models had to be skinnier and skinnier and skinnier because they essentially had the same job description as a coat hanger.
That's right.
And that translates into girls in Omaha puking up lunch. unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so I love to see where these things come from, so you can, you name it and you claim it. Like, mm-hmm. well, actually, you don't really have to be skinny. This is just so this guy can sell sure. a dress.
Sure.
That's what this is all about. And sure. that's, and standards of beauty develop along those lines.
But what about when you take the clothes off? Who's deciding that? Is that what you're getting at?
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, I don't know where that came from. I don't see how it's not
somehow related to that.
Yeah, somehow related to the appearance of youth. Well, I could be completely wrong.
I mean, I think that's a really good question, and I think that that and absolutely
dudes. And I don't know where it came from with dudes. At all.
Well, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, for sure. The idea of, I mean, it makes sense that if you follow, I mean, that's probably accurate, but as you follow what you're describing in the way a woman's body became idealized, the boobs thing gets confusing, right? Because all of a sudden it is like, well, that's not what a little girl is.
You know,
Twiggy is more what a little girl is. You sort of see how that could become an ideal, but the fact that that's like everything else stays the same, but now you have huge boobs is it's a confusing time. We're in a confusing time. Listen, well, on the first minute, but this is what I'm going to say real quick is I wonder if it is, and this is now going into another bit of dangerous territory, but in terms of pornography, I wonder if it has to do with the more racy, the more exposed, the more, you know what I mean? It's like, how graphic can we get and how much can we see of anything? And if that's a sort of like that's an upping the ante in that way, that it's like, listen, if we just get rid of all the hair, then there's nothing hiding.
Yeah. It's
we need it more.
Yeah. You get to, as Tom Waits would say, you get down to women without skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a part of it. And you go back to, when the 70s, when it was all free for all, and then it slowly got, bodies, hair in the 80s, hair was crazy and everything became a little primped. I do think the feminine body image is really fascinating. There's two things that I find really interesting. Little girls are obsessed with mermaids.
I certainly was.
Right. Which is odd because of all the mythological creatures, mermaids are the ones that don't buy shoes. Which you'd think is counterintuitive to what women would like. Two, Barbie.
Like, I have a whole opinion on shoes.
The barbification of women's bodies. And this doesn't apply to everybody, but to certain people. Like, Barbie's body doesn't even work from an engineering standpoint.
That's right.
Her feet do not work.
That's right. They were built for high heel shoes.
If your feet were the size of a deck of cards, you couldn't walk on
them. But also, they're not flat, right? She's made on her tiptoes.
The size of them.
Right.
If
they're tiny.
If women had feet like Barbie, our country would literally be crawling with chicks. Because.
We conform our feet to get smaller. I always wish I had bigger feet because I feel like I do have too small of feet for my body. But here's what I'll say real quick about shoes. This is a whole other thing. But I ask myself about the whole shoes thing and like women love shoes. And Liam Sullivan has a really funny like character that he does that's online that was really popular. Where he's just this character that sings about shoes. a female character and he's in drag. But isn't it possible that the obsession with shoes is directly born out of the fact that there's something universal about that is less scary and damaging about than the way that clothes hang on a woman's body? Like there's something unifying about being obsessed with shoes because you can sort of, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm kind of saying it's bad, but I mean that it's not a good reflection of where we are as a culture, but that there's something about the safeness of accessorizing your feet that doesn't take into account your cellulite or your hips
or your
face is not pretty enough or your boobs aren't big enough or they're too big or they're not small enough. There's something about feet that there's only so many things you can complain about before we can all kind of all women can get behind. I can change the way my shoes look and I don't have to think too much about how much I should or shouldn't be feeling good about my body.
Totally. And I also think that are you a shoe? Do you have a lot of shoes?
I do have a lot of shoes. And I went from when I lived in San Francisco, having like two pairs of shoes because I walked everywhere to living here and going, I can kind of, but I like accessorizing a lot anyway. Yeah.
My ex-wife,
but I don't have the closet full of shoes that men think of or other women think of as like being, I mean, I have like a lot of sneakers and lot of flat boots.
My ex-wife has some shoes.
I don't have I don't own a pair of Manolo Blahniks or Louboutin or have a couple of pairs of high heels and that's it because I can't. I don't like the way they feel.
Same with me.
You understand.
I also think that a part of that is that everybody needs to be into something that you tangibly collect. I collect very specific nerdy items, but the ones that I have and that I love, you can't take from me.
Right.
They mean a lot to me. And I think people like shoes. It's a thing that it has nothing to do with your life or your work. And it's just a fun hobby and that you can wear them and they're pretty.
And it doesn't take up the space of an automobile or
some guys like guns.
Certainly true. Certainly true. Some girls like guns, I'm sure.
I often wondered if before the advent of guns thousands of years ago, if there was a group of paranoid, angry cavemen that were really into their rock collections.
Yes.
You'll pry these rocks from my cold, dead hands.
Yes.
And it will be easy because my thumbs don't oppose.
Yeah. This giant thing, I only use this to cut down wheat. Now, hang on. What's that blood on the end of it?
I just use it to protect my family.
That's right. That's right. Were there guns in your house or anything
like that? I had a gun rack in my bedroom.
You did?
Yeah.
I don't even know if I've held a real gun.
I've held them and shot them. I'm not a gun dude at all. But everybody in my family was a hunter, and my bedroom happened to be the room
that
the gun
hunters.
Cabinet fit in.
Oh,
so I literally went to bed
you.
Staring at like seven rifles. And
that's
woke up looking
so
at them.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's weird. I didn't even remember. You know, it's so funny. I don't even think about it. I don't even remember it.
Yeah.
To that point, like you asked me if I had a photo of myself as a teenager. I don't. I don't have any photos of myself outside of what's in my high school yearbook. As a teenager, I don't know where any of them are.
Yeah. You're not the person who carefully guards that memorabilia the way you
would. Not that stuff, but then when you get into when I moved out to San Francisco and then I have all that stuff.
Yeah.
But,
well, is that a reflection? Is that, I mean, not to overly psychoanalyze it, but is that a reflection of kind of, like you were saying, you kind of came into your own?
Yeah.
And then
absolutely
you wanted to sort
is.
Of hold on to those memories in a different
that's
way.
That's absolutely what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I didn't, like when I went to college, I was just killing time. Before I got out of college, I didn't really drink deep the college experience. I was always doing stand up and open mics and driving into Boston and doing open mics.
Yeah.
And I had a show at UMass and, it was, you know, I was a comedian and I was in school instead of having a day job.
That was my other question actually, as I forgot to ask if you dabbled in any sort of drugs or alcohol when you were in high school.
No, I've been drunk one time in my life in 1977. I've never done any drugs at all. People don't believe that. I've never done anything.
I fully believe it because I think that, like me, the idea of being in control is more attractive somehow than being out of it.
But. Yeah, I think that's well put. And I grew up eyeball deep in it. I mean, there was nothing ever had any mystery to me whatsoever.
Yeah. And by the way, these guys know I did plenty of drugs, but I think part of the reason that stopped for me was that it became like, oh shit, I need to have everything lined up for myself or I feel scared.
When I was a kid growing up, I didn't grow up in a family of drinkers. I grew up in a world of drinkers. Mm-hmm. I didn't know adults that weren't getting drunk on the weekend. On the weekend. In the weekend starting on Wednesday.
Loose weekend.
And then when I got into stand-up and doing stand-up in Boston in the early 80s, there was so much cocaine. There was so much pot. And I was around it so much that I never, ever had any interest in it at all.
God, it really doesn't take much of being... Because when I think about it and you say that, it's like I was not exposed... to anybody who was making a fool of themselves or the first time I tried anything, it wasn't like I had seen somebody that I would have thought, oh, I don't want to be like that. But it really doesn't take much now for me to be, if I'm around even my friends that I love, but if they just get wasted, if I think about like if I had been exposed to that, if it was my family or anything like that when I was younger, I don't know that I would have experimented because I do find it tiresome to be around wasted people when you're sober.
This is getting into a serious area, but when you are a child and you are around adults who are inebriated, it's very destructive to you because what you realize is that these people that you need to depend on and trust and rely on are not always going to be available to you.
Yeah.
And that sends a very terrible message to you at an age where you shouldn't be getting that message, which is don't be vulnerable to anyone.
Yeah.
And that leads down to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And so I had that, and I had such a visceral anathema to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, doing stand up in Boston.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
Maybe the Eagles roadie saw more coke than I did.
Maybe. Yeah.
Like, I remember being in the green room at Nick's Comedy Stop in Boston, sitting next to Sam Kennison, watching him do 7-inch rails of cocaine, throwing up, and then going on stage.
Yeah.
And being really funny.
Yeah, I guess you could have taken
but it was just like, and they loved me.
Way.
And all of those guys loved me because I didn't do cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to share it.
Yeah, there you go.
They have to share it. Can Dana open?
Yeah.
Because they knew that if it was a road gig, I'd drive, and they didn't have to worry about the way home, and they didn't have to share anything.
Sure.
So I worked a lot.
Well, that part of it's really good. That's all really good.
Which is not to say that I don't, which is not to say that I'm not messed up.
Well, listen, we all have our special, our very, very special things that are completely messed up about us.
Yeah.
Listen,
we all have our specialness.
I mean, you're very special in your brokenness, Dana. Don't worry. I need to get into this MASH game, which is something I do at the end of my episodes. And I'm trying to base it off of stuff that we talked about. So, and I don't care if you know what MASH is because you'll figure it out. But
MASH game with Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly.
Close. But this is MASH. M-A-S-H stands for Mansion, Apartment, Shack, and House. And I'm going to ask you for three different things in a series of categories. And then I'm going to do a process of elimination and give you your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Okay.
Not to be confused with your actual future.
Okay.
So my first category is three horror worlds. I won't limit it to television or film, but three horror worlds that are fictitious that I guess I'm going to give you your safety and that you're sort of in a protective bubble, but there's something thrilling about being there. They're actual real worlds that you, Dana Gould, can drop into and sort of experience viscerally as a real place.
Oh, awesome. What a great question.
Thank you. You made it great because that was something that it seemed like a no-brainer.
Well, trickier than you'd think. Horror worlds.
I know.
Fictitious Eastern Europe of the Universal horror films.
Great.
I believe it was called Vassaria.
Okay.
The fictitious 19th century England of the Hammer.
Okay.
Horror films. And the third one, this is really creepily specific. The overcast, perpetual winter of the heavily sideburned, turtlenecked world of made-for-TV horror movies in the early 1970s, of which I mean When Michael Calls, Trilogy of Terror, The Night Gallery, The Night Stalker.
Yeah, Night Gallery, that does it for me, for sure.
The Night Stalker.
Oh, that's great. Okay, that's great. Okay, next category is three people that you wish, whether they're living or dead from any era, were your buddy. Somebody that you could just call up and know that they would love to take your call and chat with you.
Oh, that you wish were your buddy, because it's like, it can't be people that you know weren't very openly friendly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, unless you want to enjoy the friendly side of, you know, that one person that's like, to me, he's great, but I know he's a monster to everybody else.
Right. Well, if you can go to any era, is interesting, because it's really, if it's your buddy, you want to look at people that are like sort of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are certain authors that are like, I wouldn't want to call them up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
They're not
I love
be
their
fun.
Work, but God, that would be horrible.
I think it would be fun to call up Oscar Wilde.
I couldn't agree more.
I think he would be fun.
I think I could not agree more.
I think it would be very, very interesting to call up and just chat with. I'm vamping because it's really...
I know, it's great. I know it's hard, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, no,
one of my favorite moments, because I don't edit this, is seeing how people react to knowing that there's empty space, as they think. Everyone has like a different way of dealing with it. Yeah. Some people go dead silent and it just seems like the podcast is over, which, you know...
I would like to talk to Robert Kennedy after 1964.
Oh my, that's great.
When he had sort of had his... psychological shift and became less of a bastard.
Okay, perfect, perfect, perfect.
And more of an open-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
I find him very, very fascinating, a fascinating person to write about, to read about. And I think, lastly, he's still alive. I would love to be able to call him, and I can't. I'd love to be able to just chat with Elvis Costello.
Oh, yeah, great, great,
and what's
great.
Weird about that one
agreed.
Is I have a friend who does.
Yeah.
It's very strange. My friend Eddie is like one of Elvis's best friends. Ugh. And they like email
that
all
that one
day.
Degree of separation is so bittersweet.
Yeah.
So bittersweet.
And he's like, you want to get this crazy email from Elvis? Don't tell me.
Yeah, that really is like your best friend marries your ex-girlfriend that you're still in love with.
Totally.
Okay, next category is three places that you would like to have a vacation home. That it's, by the way, very easy for you to get to. It's not like, ugh, I would just say Australia, forever. Like you can transport yourself there, teleportation style.
Maui.
Great.
I'm very simple. I'm not a very...
You're not going to be like, there is a small town outside of Reykjavik. That sounds like something I would say, and I haven't even been to Reykjavik.
Yeah, no. Maui, Oxford. And maybe somewhere in, I'd go to the south of France.
Great. Great, great, great. I'll leave it. There's plenty of places in there that I think we've got it covered. Okay. Next thing is, and I don't know if this is a good category, if it's going to be not a good one for you, but what about three items of memorabilia, unrealistic for you to ever own, either because they don't exist anymore, or because it's too big, or because it's too expensive, or someone else says three items of memorabilia from something that you could have.
Like a movie memorabilia,
I'm sort of thinking about stuff that I know you have.
Yeah, because I actually own a lot
of
that stuff.
But I mean, like stuff that you could never have because it's just too, you know.
Right, like the rosebud,
just
slag,
impossible.
The rosebud.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Okay. Exactly.
No, that's actually not hard.
Okay.
I would love to own the miniature ship from the original Planet of the Apes that sunk in the lake.
Ooh.
And I have held the miniature made from that mold.
Mm-hmm.
So I know.
Mm-hmm.
But just to have that one scored the way it was would be great.
Awesome.
This original I have held in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually in the same location as the ape ship, and I can take you to this location, not to brag.
I like what I'm hearing.
Getting some of my sexy back from my from my crab lice sidebar. one of the original flying saucers from Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Great, 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 great.
Which my friend Bob owns, and
that's
I've
great.
Held in my hand.
There's got to be a way for us to off Bob.
Bob's doing a pretty good job.
There you go. Shout out to Bob, everybody.
Bob Burns is the greatest guy ever. And then a third one, just a piece of memorabilia that's
and maybe it's not even something you think of as being out there per se, but it's just like, I would love to own one of Marilyn's jackets. I only say that because Wonder Boys was on yesterday.
Manson's jackets?
One of Marilyn Manson's jackets? Yes.
Really?
Did you not know I was a huge Marilyn Manson fan? Isn't that written all over my face?
I know what I want.
Okay.
I want the blue sweatshirt that John Lennon wore in Help that had an Indian design on the collar and the cuffs. It had like an Indian cuffs and an Indian collar, God, but it was otherwise just a blue sweatshirt.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. Okay, perfect. All right, listen. This is MASH. I got to get some ladies in here. And that means alternate universe. Could be somebody you want some sexy times with. Could be your alternate universe wife, however you want to think of it. But three women, again, from any era, could be like circa 1950s, this actress or whatever. I'll even go fictional, like Wonder Woman.
Chicks I want to bang? Is that what this is, basically?
I mean, essentially.
I'm going to really reveal my type.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this is so easy. Diana Rigg from The Avengers.
Ah, great. Great, great, great.
Jenny Agutter from Logan's Run or An American Werewolf in London.
Okay.
She is just crazy ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of...
Princess Diana. Wow, I would not have thought.
Oddly, no. And then I love that sort of. I can't think of her name. The French singer.
Oh, not like
her father,
Jean Seaborg. Not
yes.
Oh, okay.
Jean Seaborg.
There we go.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Janet's brain. I'm surprised that I came up with that at all. Okay. Next one is...
Oddly, the woman I'm dating is long, dark hair and bangs.
Well, there you go. I know. I was kind of waiting for that and then it didn't come. There's still hope for me yet. Okay. So well, next category is...
People I can't.
What about three things you wish you could have written on? I don't know how you feel about that, but are there three things, either a film that you wish you would have written or
TV shows
that would have been fun to write on?
Oh, yeah. I wish I had written An American Werewolf in London.
Great.
That, to me, is like, that's the perfect movie.
You must have met John Landis. So
I've worked with John Landis, yeah, and I love John Landis. I do, too.
He's got some good stories.
He's got some good damn stories.
Yeah.
Deceptively physically strong.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Good to know.
He started as a stuntman.
Oh, I didn't.
Started his career as a stuntman. I love John, and he was telling me a story, and he grabbed me as part of the story, like, and he comes and he grabs me, and it was like Jesus Christ. very strong, great guy.
Is it possible he is the American Werewolf in London?
Yes, it is very possible.
Great.
He was also in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, for which I will always love him.
Sure.
And so in American Werewolf in London, I definitely wish I had written.
Great.
I wish I had, I would love to have written on Doctor Who. I just think that I would be so proud to have written on that show.
Yeah.
I would say Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Great.
To have been in that room. Would have been.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, just two more categories. This next one is a perennial favorite of mine. I don't know if it'll appeal to you, but three things that, for me, it's food, but for three foods, or I guess drinks, I guess, but I know that you don't care about that either, that nothing bad comes of eating them in perpetuity. And you can snap of your fingers and be like a Philly cheesesteak that you can only get at blah, blah, blah. Three.
This is terrible because... My ex-wife, who, by the way, I talk about, like, my ex-wife and I have a great relationship.
Absolutely, you do.
She's a great woman. I can't say enough good about her.
Yeah.
We didn't,
no, you have one of those relationships that's like, you have such a great
We didn't a make great a great married couple, but we are amazing.
Well, that's how Chris and I are. I mean, that's very much, it's very much that. And it's so nice not to lose that when you have that shared affection.
Well, actually, you gain a lot of it.
Absolutely,
back,
absolutely.
We have a great relationship. And she's such a foodie.
Uh-huh.
And twice, because she is who she is, we went to the French Laundry.
Uh-huh.
Up in there. And it was just lost on me.
Oh, was it?
It was just lost on me. And I'm just like, there portions are really small.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
It was just...
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all comfort foods, like
but that's what this is for. It should be mac and cheese or a
turkey burger with cheddar cheese and mushrooms.
Great.
And an ice cold Diet Coke.
Great.
You cannot go wrong.
Two more. Do you have a sweet tooth?
Hmm?
Do you have a sweet tooth?
Yes. This is like, I'm going to die tomorrow. I can eat anything I want. Yeah.
Yeah. You can eat this forever and nothing bad will happen to you.
Vanilla ice cream or frozen yogurt. I don't discern, really. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to me. With a jar of Skippy Super Chunk.
Oh, yeah. You and I have just a peanut butter thing. Spoon. I forgot that I can't have peanut butter in the house anymore. Yeah.
If I had peanut butter in the house, I would look like Chris Farley towards the end.
Yeah. Yep. It's great.
And I hate to say this because it sounds emotional. my mother's fried chicken. My mother's from Virginia.
That's great.
And the secret is, you fry the chicken in bacon grease.
Oh, that makes sense. Sure. What isn't better in bacon grease?
You fry up a whole thing of bacon. Bacon.
Yep.
Put that aside.
Yeah.
Keep the grease, and then you put the you put the chicken in whatever you put it in.
Yeah.
And you fry it in that, and it's just crazy.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, someone out there is going to make
this. And again, you need that with a big Diet Coke. And maybe tied with that would be...
it's too bad you already picked
your three. Okay.
Your final category, I got to go with it, superpowers. Superpowers. Could be more obscure, less Superman, and more like one random X-Men character. I always like to give that example.
I guess it's a superpower. I want to time travel.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I would never go forward. I just want to go, like, I can't tell you how
Is it a better category if I say three eras that you get to visit? Well, I guess.
Yeah.
On whether you have other superpowers that you're excited about. Or if this is like the number one.
Well, sure. I would like to, here's the thing. I would love to fly, but does the ability to fly make it an effort to walk?
Right. God, that's so you. And what to if come you, up with a downside of flying?
And what if
I
you could fly?
Walking would be such a drag.
Or is it an effort? Because you're always like, your body's ready to go. Or what if you could fly, but only like 4 feet off the ground? Uh-huh. So it's like, excuse me, sorry.
I say you can fly in whatever capacity you want to fly.
That clearly, to travel back in time. And I really would like to not be a big muscular dude, but be able to annihilate them when you see them acting like douchebags.
Yeah. I think that's great. What a great... Wow, you really maximize these categories.
I've often wanted Hulk strength just when you see a jerk.
Oh, absolutely.
And just the Dirty Harry fantasy of like...
Yes.
To just cold... What's your problem?
And it's so much better when they don't see it coming because you're not this sort of beefcake or whatever. Okay.
But I would love to just drive down the Sunset Strip in 1966.
It's great. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you might get it. But listen, this is a process of elimination.
No, I won't.
This is a process of elimination. Don't doubt the MASH game.
But you know how we know there will never be a time machine? No one has come back to brag about it.
If they have, they're just not talking about it for some reason or other.
Yeah, that's true.
She said, hopefully. Okay, this is just a thing. You don't need to know what I'm doing, but tell me when to stop.
What a terrible thing to say, because I'll never.
Oh, no, I'll run out of paper.
Keep going.
When I run out of paper, that's it. I ran out of paper. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to do some quick calculations. There's not really a lot of math involved. Certainly no trigonometry. When I come back, I'm going to reveal your MASH future.
Okay,
it'll be very satisfying. Fair. Okay, I have your results. You do have AIDS. That's what this.
How
what
blown
this
is it?
Determines. Okay, listen. A lot of great stuff came through for you, so I want to congratulate you on all of it. I want to congratulate you on your mansion in Maui.
Oh, nice.
Well done. I don't know if some of that came from the American Werewolf in London money, but certainly you wrote that.
If you talk to John Landis,
they'll punch you in the face.
Yeah, there's not a lot of stuff called American Werewolf in London money.
That's fair. You own the mini ship from the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that's nice.
Pretty cool.
I'd be very happy about that. I know where it is.
I mean, we both do now.
It's at Bill Kreber's house.
Well,
I could get it.
Well, anybody want to volunteer to get involved in a caper? I want to congratulate you on your ability to step into the fictitious Eastern European world of Viseria.
Yes.
Where you can also eat all of the fried chicken that your mother makes as you want with no negative impact. I hope that's something that you share with your companion, Jean Cibou.
Oh, yeah. No problem with that.
And if you decide that you're dissatisfied with any of this, rest assured that you can travel to any time, mm-hmm. avoiding the future wholeheartedly.
Right.
But you did gain the skill of time travel. The yeah. superpower of time travel. So that's, I mean, oh, and you can laugh about all of this over cognac with Oscar Wilde. So that is your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
This is, that's fantastic. This is what having a cognac with Oscar Wilde sounds like. Oscar, no.
Depends on how much you've had.
I'm
maybe.
Just here to hang.
You shouldn't have used that term. There's one thing that I didn't warn you about that I never warn anybody about, which is that only during this Boys of Summer series, when I have guys on the podcast, do I end the podcast with that person participating in a rendition of Boys of Summer, just tiny little bit, whatever part you can think of, if you can think of anything.
I can.
Okay, good. The worst was with Ron Funches. He was like, I don't even know who Don Henley is.
Oh, yeah. No, I want to get the lyric right because it's so...
I think I have the lyrics printed out somewhere, but I never have them handy. I have a lot of...
it's something... I might get part of it wrong.
It's really okay.
But here it is. The other day, do I have to sing it?
Yeah. Oh, and it starts out on the road today.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Out on the road today, I saw a long haired hippie with a Cadillac. Voice inside my head said, don't look back. You can never look back.
That's great. I'm going to finish it out for you. Thought I knew what love was. What did I know? Those days are gone forever.
I should just let them go. And I can't see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
You got your hair combed back and your wayfarers on, baby.
I can tell you my love for you would still be strong after the boys of summer have gone.
God, you really did it. That's maybe the best one this summer, and this is our last Boys of Summer episode.
Can
so
I end
really
on a name-dropping
glad.
Celebrity story involving Don Henley?
I wish you would. Please, that brings everything full circle. That makes everything I've been doing worth something.
Here's the name drop. I was with Bill Maher at an Eagles concert.
Check and check.
And they're singing the song, You Can't Hide Your Lion Eyes.
Sure.
And your smile is a thin disguise. And
oh, no.
Bill just turns to me and he goes, so judgmental. And it's really true.
Yeah.
Like, who are you to point the finger? Because you guys were so... The oath of fealty that Eagles must have taken. That's where the Promise Keepers came from.
That's right.
The Eagles roadies.
Good to know. God, what a good, wholesome crew. Oh,
exactly.
My God. So judgmental.
So judgmental.
Dana, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Anytime.
You are on Twitter. I know that for certain. Are you just at Dana Gould?
I'm at Dana Gould.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else that the people need to know?
I have a podcast.
It's a really good podcast. I've done it.
They come out like clockwork, once every 6 weeks.
Go ahead and subscribe to it, and you'll just get it automatically, and then you don't have to kill yourself wondering when it's going to come out. Mm-hmm. It's a little present under the tree.
If there's not a new one out, know that I'm working on it.
Yeah, or he's died.
I've died.
You will find that out eventually.
Yes. It's a good show.
It's a great podcast.
It's a good show.
And it's very thoughtful and edited, unlike mine. thank you so much, guys. I hope you enjoyed the
Boys of talk
Summer.
About
I would say it's an almost all-based Muff podcast.
It is. In fact, I'm going to have Kim Shattuck of the Muffs as my new permanent co-host.
Oh, you're such a good sport for talking about that, and you're a gentleman for showing concern in joke form. It's fine. It's either fine or it's not, you guys.
My guest, the crab-ridden container.
Oh, God, you're really going to have problems with Red Lobster sponsoring you. Guys, happy Boys of Summer. Happy finish of Boys of Summer. Talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.